John Hanson in for Steve Bertrand on the Wintrust Business Lunch. You can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, at John, J-O-N, the Cubs fan. Yes, that's my Twitter handle. Or on Facebook at John, J-O-N, Hanson, H-A-N-S-E-N. And we start every Monday, Steve does, and they've joined me again here today. Jim Dahlke and Catherine Davis, associate editor and reporter, respectively, for Chicago Inno. Happy Monday, guys.
Happy Monday, John.
Hey, John.
Thanks for coming on, even though it's not Steve.
Hey, we are happy to be here. Even more happy, actually, than Steve, yeah.
Well, you shouldn't say that. I'm going to send a recording of that right over to Bertrand.
No, Steve knows we love him.
Let's jump right into Outcome Health, who was a startup darling in this city for a better part of a decade, more than a decade, in fact, raised a lot of money in the last year from investors after a long time of not accepting outside money, and things have really kind of hit the fan for their company in the last year.
Right. Outcome Health, for those who don't know, is a sort of health technology company. They build in doctor exam room wall boards, so their technology sits inside the exam room and in the waiting rooms at doctor's offices. This is technology really meant to engage with patients at the point of care, right? So you're sitting there with your doctor, and they have the doctors able to use this interactive wall board to really explain your condition, explain what's going on, and to really help you kind of understand what's going on with your healthcare. What they're able to do with these wall boards is sell advertising. So advertisers will spend big bucks to get, and it's often pharmaceutical companies will spend to get their ads right in front of consumers as they're sitting at the doctor's office.
They're already thinking about that. It makes sense.
It's a point of advertising in the doctor in the healthcare space that hasn't existed really before. So it's a big opportunity, and they raised about $500 million earlier this year. So really quickly rose to Chicago's most valuable tech startup, valued at over $5 billion. And things really started to take a turn, as we've discussed here in the program, last month when the Wall Street Journal came out with a big investigative piece showing that Outcome Health manipulated some of the stats around the effectiveness of its ads to its advertisers. So basically, they kind of juke the stats to show that their ads were appearing on more screens than actually existed. So the Wall Street Journal was able to break that story. What has fallen, the fallout from that has included a lawsuit from its investors. So those people, those folks, which included Goldman Sachs, that put that about $500 million into Outcome Health, are now suing to get some of their investment back.
And they said that they were given the same misleading information.
So right, they are suing for fraud. So they believe that they were given the same sort of doctored statistics that the advertisers were given. So they believe that they invested. They believe that they would not have made their investment if they were given the true statistics based on the effectiveness of the ads.
Doctored statistics, no pun intended. But what does Outcome Health have to say about this?
Outcome Health really is sort of blaming this on a couple of bad actors. They do not believe this is widespread. They do not believe this is coming from top-level executives. Their founders, Outcome says, are not involved in this. This is the actions of a couple of bad eggs. So the investors are kind of disagreeing. They believe that this is a sort of company-wide problem. This is a management problem. So what Outcome is saying is, hey, yes, there has been a problem. A couple of employees are responsible for this. They have done what they call, quote, make good. So they've given free advertising back to the advertisers who are able to, again, get more ads in front of the screens that they were able to not from the past.
When you're talking about millions and millions of dollars, though, there's really no make good with investors. And investors, I mean, they just want their money back, right? Essentially?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, they believe that they invested in a fraud, right? So they want to make sure that they can recoup some of their investment. So the two companies, or the investors and Outcome, are in court actually today. So we are kind of kicking things off after a very, very newsy week last week.
And since they were one of the startup darlings, this thing has ripple effects and ramifications, and it kind of sends alarm bells maybe through the whole industry. And I guess it raises a flag that everyone's all aware of. As investors, you're really trusting the data and the information that is given to you by the company, and you've really got to do your own homework on your end of things as well.
Yeah,
if you can.
It's kind of amazing that we kind of gotten to this point, right? I mean, you investors are really relying that the information that the founders are giving to them when the due diligence process is correct, right? Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, you can only do so much, and you hope that the company that you're trying to invest in is being honest with you.
Interesting stuff. Okay, let's talk about DesignShare with Catherine. And Catherine, this is a Chicago-based online platform. It's really cool. It lets women rent some really highly expensive items that maybe you don't use all the time, and that way you could save some costs, right?
Yeah. So DesignShare, they have an online platform. You can rent handbags, clothes, shoes from other women in the Chicago area. So, you know, they pride themselves on having brands like Gucci, Chanel, Dolce & Gabbana, brands that, you know, women can't usually just go out and buy, you know, like fast fashion at Zara or Forever 21.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, they launched in March, and they've been growing pretty steadily, and they have some big plans for next year because, you know, they only operate in Chicago right now, but next year they'll be letting women rent things nationwide.
Catherine, have you ever watched Parks and Recreation?
No.
So there was a character in there, Tom, who built a company where kids could rent expensive clothes. What was it called? Rent-a-swag, I think he called it. And the idea was he had a brick and mortar and you rented from him. This is different. This is peer-to-peer, right?
Right. Peer-to-peer and strictly online.
That's really fast. How much, like, how does the company then make money? Do they take a percentage of what gets shared?
Yeah. So renters keep 75% of the transaction, you know, on their item that they've rented. And then the company, of course, keeps 25%. And there's a $5 like insurance fee associated with each one.
I've got really cruddy gym shoes. Can I post those or is there some sort of limit?
So the limit is that the item must retail for $200.
At least
$200.
And so they're raising money and they've raised a lot of money though. You've been saying, I mean, I think they're over approaching half a million, right?
So they've raised $100,000 so far, and they have a goal of $350,000. This is just their angel round, but I'm sure we'll see more fundraising rounds in the future.
Well, Catherine, here's the big question for you. Would you ever wear a dress that someone else wore?
I don't think so. It would have to be something really spectacular.
I think that's the thing. And then, like, I think a handbag is one thing. Like, that's something you're going to carry around. Maybe it matches a dress you have in the closet. What about shoes? You're not speaking out against the company. I'm just curious if you yourself would do it.
I don't think so. And I think it's because, you know, when it's peer-to-peer renting like this, you really have to trust who you're getting it from. I mean, someone can put up a pretty good looking photo of a pair of shoes, and then when you get them, they're not what you thought they'd be. So
that'll be interesting to see how they do that. Okay. Jim and Catherine, you guys are going to stick around, right?
Let's do it. Yeah.
1224, joined by the great folks from Chicago Inno, Jim Dahlke and Catherine Davis. And before we move on to your next story, we talked about Design Share with Catherine, the Chicago-based platform that allows women to rent things from each other. They are one of your 50 on Fire awards, right? Talk to us about those, Jim, the awards.
Yeah, they're one of the 150 people and companies that are finalists for our 50 on Fire awards. So 50 on Fire is Chicago Inno's end-of-year award show where we give 50 on. We award the 50 on Fire, and these are both people and companies, and really it's pretty one of the more broad award ceremonies, I think, because it's really why you're on fire could be any number of reasons. Mm-hmm. And we got a tremendous number of really great submissions from across the Chicago innovation ecosystem, and we're going to award the winners on Thursday evening. So you can check out chicagoinno.com for tickets about that.
Awesome. Tell us about WeWork. When I talk to veterans on the programs I do on WCIU, the common theme about transitioning back to civilian life is that there's no roadmap, and often a lot of veterans with all these amazing skill sets, they don't get put to good use and they don't have avenues to do that. And WeWork's one of the organizations that's trying to help them out.
Exactly. So veterans really are kind of hardwired to be entrepreneurs, right? They're very goal-oriented. They're very loyal. They work very hard, right? And so, but often, exactly as you mentioned, they don't have the resources to do that. A Chicago-based company actually called Bunker Labs really helps veterans get embedded in the entrepreneurship community. And just last week, they announced a partnership with WeWork. So WeWork is the large national co-working chain. They have co-working buildings across the U.S. And Bunker Labs is going to be working with WeWork to give veteran entrepreneurs 6 free months of co-working space. So not only are these veterans being able to connect with the tech communities in 10 different cities across the U.S., they're going to have some free co-working space too.
I know a lot of people work at home these days, and there's a value to that, and there's things to be done there, certainly if you're in the structure of a company where that's built in. But I figure like a workspace where you're sitting next to people, talking to people, expanding ideas, trying out new things, that really breeds entrepreneurship. Having people face to face,
certainly, and that's WeWork's whole deal, right? They have communal kitchens. There's, you know, coffee on tap. There's beer in the afternoon. I mean, they really build these little entrepreneurship communities where people can get together. And exactly as you said, rather than having to build your business in your basement, build it at a co-working space. And this is an opportunity for them to work with entrepreneurs on top of that.
Beer in the afternoon. Yeah. Sounds amazing at work. Okay, Amazon Key. This freaks a lot of people out, coming into your home, letting drivers do it, drop off what they got to do, and then leave. Although one really cool thing about it as it launches here in Chicago, I didn't realize that it comes with a kit, and they actually videotape the interaction that happens in the home.
Yeah, the $250 kit comes with a camera and a smart lock. So basically, it's allowing your Amazon Prime driver to not just drop off your package at your doorstep, but actually open the door and go inside. So it's something that maybe sounds sort of weird on the surface, but it's actually not as strange as like Airbnb, right? Like people are willing to like let people sleep in their bed. So if you're willing to do that, I'm guessing you're willing to like let the delivery driver come inside, even with the added layer of security of the camera.
If he or she wants to take a nap, I'll charge for that. Like as long as the camera's on, I know what's going on in there. Yeah, I think that that idea freaks people out, but a lot of, I mean, pet sitters come in that walk your dog walkers, so it's really not that unusual of a concept.
No, and they are opening this up to third parties, so your pet sitter can use the Amazon key as well.
That's awesome. Catherine Davis, we got about 30 seconds left. Talk about this Chicago startup that's making a healthier lemonade.
Yeah, so Populu launched just in June, and they're making an antioxidant lemonade with no preservatives, no artificial flavors, and only 14 grams of sugar. So, you know, that's really different from what we're seeing from like Minute Maid or those other big brands of lemonade that are just packed with sugar. The founder said that she, you know, came up with this concept when she was pregnant and was craving citrus, but didn't want all that sugar.
And there's a secret ingredient that kind of makes this all work, right?
Yeah, aronia berries. So they're locally grown superfruits, kind of like a black blueberry.
Interesting. I didn't even know there was something called a black blueberry.
Yeah, I didn't know it was grown here.
Yeah, there we go. And the name of the company is great, too. It's Populu, right?
Populu.
Populu.
Yep.
Okay. Populu. That's a great name. Catherine, Jim, thank you guys so much for stopping by. And where can people find out more information?
Check us out at chicagono.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Happy Monday afternoon, everyone. John Hansen in for Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. You can follow me on Twitter or Instagram at John the Cubs Fan. That's J-O-N. So happy to be here this afternoon. By the way, Nazis are ruining Twitter and Facebook wants your nudes. We're going to get to those stories in just a little bit. But right now, we're going to be talking about a really important story to myself, and I think a lot of people all over Chicago and the country, and that's how gay-friendly or LGBT-friendly is your place of business. And luckily, the Human Rights Campaign is able to kind of put out a report that ranks businesses on how friendly they are to the community. And Dina Fidas is the director of the Workplace Equality Program at HRC. Dina, thank you so much for joining us here on this Monday afternoon.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
So I wanted to ask, because this report has been coming out for a number of years, and I think that we should broadly say that there's a lot of good news in these reports, right? More and more businesses are want to be reviewed, and a lot more perfect scores are coming across.
Absolutely. We have just seen exponential growth, not just in participating businesses, but those earning top ratings in our Corporate Equality Index, which began in 2002.
Before we get to breaking down the scores and what companies could use a little bit more work or a lot more work, what goes into a score? What does a business do to have a good score or a bad score?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we have a mantra that we want the Corporate Equality Index to be transparent, fair, and attainable. So there's no funny math. There's nothing subjective in it. The points go from 0 to 100 and are broken down into four key categories. Number one, what we call inclusive non-discrimination policies. So where federal law does not actually protect the American worker consistently on the basis of sexual orientation and gender identity, we look to private sector employers to enact their own policies.
And can we just pause for just 1 second there? Because I don't think a lot of people may not know this. Chicago's a pretty progressive city, and most of Northeast, you know, much of Illinois isn't the whole country. There's good companies and bad companies out there. But certain states, you can still be fired for being gay.
Yes, actually in a majority of states. As I said, the federal equal employment opportunity laws do not cover workers in 2017 on the basis of sexual orientation or gender identity. There are some individual states and there are some individual municipalities. But, for example, myself as a member of the LGBTQ community, if I were to look at a job posting, I would have to do additional research to see if, in fact, I would be covered by a particular employer.
That is crazy.
We think so, and that's why we've also rounded up. We actually have over 100 businesses signed on to our coalition in support of the federal fix here, which is known as the Federal Equality Act, which would finally extend those basic civil rights statutes to the LGBTQ community.
Cool. Well, Dina, I didn't mean to interrupt you because that was the first pillar, and you have three others to get to, right?
Oh, that's quite all right. I'll be succinct. And those are certainly important points. Number two, we look at equitable benefits. Everything from spousal equivalent, partner benefits, and also what has increasingly become a greater norm across corporate America, ensuring that transgender individuals can, in fact, access medically necessary health care coverage just as any other employee does. You know, we go for parity, not special benefits or special accommodations, but rather what is being offered to the workforce, and are we ensuring that that is equitably extended to the LGBTQ workforce? Mm-hmm. The third pillar has to do with internal education and accountability. You know, anyone in the business community will tell you, if you can't measure it, you can't manage it. And so we look to businesses to extend their existing structures around training, around managerial accountability to LGBTQ diversity. We've also seen just a huge growth in the number of businesses that have what are known as employee resource groups for LGBTQ workers and allies. Allies being those folks who aren't gay, lesbian, trans, or bi themselves, but support equality. Maybe they're a parent of a trans child or just, broadly want to be supportive of their colleagues. And so we're seeing an increased presence there. And then lastly, the fourth pillar of the Corporate Equality Index speaks to how businesses engage with the LGBTQ community outside their four walls. Mm-hmm. So, for example, virtually every Fortune 500 business, virtually every major top law firm in this country engages in philanthropy, in sponsorship, in job fairs. And so, again, in keeping with our mantra of parity and equity, we simply look at that same level of engagement for the LGBTQ community.
When you look at 100 scores here in Chicago, thankfully there's a lot of them. Leo Burnett, Starcom, Boeing, United, a lot of names people will recognize. I imagine companies that are thinking this way, they say they want to get that 100 score. They want to attract employees of all, whatever you believe in or whatever orientation you may be.
Absolutely. And I will say we have seen tremendous leadership out of Illinois over the years. You know, whether you're talking about major law firms, whether you're talking about Boeing, whether you're talking about Groupon, you know, a company that didn't exist when we had the first Corporate Equality Index, so many Illinois-based companies have adopted these policies and practices to ensure that they have that coveted 100%. Because for them, they see it as essential to maintaining their leading edge over peers.
That's interesting. When you said competency and leadership out of Illinois, that's not something we hear too often, especially when you refer to our state and local governments. But I digress a little bit. I wanted to talk really quickly. Navistar is a company a lot of people know. It's based out of Lyle. They have a score of 30. That's incredibly low. Perkins & Will, which has designed the Peggy Notobart Museum, which has designed a couple other big high-profile buildings here in Chicago, they have a score of 35. And I'm not trying to necessarily shame them and say don't patronize their business or whatever it may be, but I imagine you want to provide them with a little incentive and let them know where they stand so maybe hopefully they can get better at this stuff.
Absolutely. And as you said, you know, we are definitely not in the name and shame game here. In fact, we publish these very positive stories to attract the attention of companies that haven't participated. You know, we want this to be a genuine benchmarking report. And what I mean is we don't just feature the top-rated companies. We actually rate the entire Fortune 500, whether or not they filled out this in-depth survey or not, we will verify that information. The reason being, as I said, when you're an LGBTQ job seeker in this country, there's very little that's guaranteed. And so you need to look up the information to see, does this company even have basic sexual orientation and gender identity protection? So it's not all about the scores. It's also about equipping the LGBTQ community with necessary information for their employment and consumer choices.
Dina, I think that this report is really important. I know that I look forward to seeing it every year. I know a lot of people do. Some people may wonder, you know, once same-sex marriage became legalized by the Supreme Court a few years back in Illinois, even a year before that, I think a lot of people who maybe, you know, don't really read up or maybe just don't really, study this stuff too often said, oh, isn't that everything? We've gotten equality everywhere. And I think it's really important to hear you say that our governments, many state governments aren't, you know, aren't really raising the standards to where they need to be. And it's really nice to highlight some of the private organizations that are doing it on their own. Dina, thank you so much for your time here today.
Thank you so much. Pleasure to be on.
Absolutely. Okay, I've been teasing it all show long. We're going to talk about Facebook and how they want your nudes coming up next on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Steve Bertrand is out. John Hansen here filling in today on this Monday afternoon. And I'm joined, as Steve is every Monday, by Randy Shaver, digital news editor at Chicago Tribune. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday.
Is this the best thing you have to look forward to on a Monday?
It actually is. Yes. Yes.
This is the one shining moment in the day.
You can see me nodding and I'm very convincing right now. No, I'm just kidding. I love being here.
So Twitter has, and Instagram has this too, a little blue check that goes next to your name when you are a verified human being. Not that the rest of Twitter isn't, but when you are, I don't even know what to say. It's not prominence. It's just that you have a role and people might want to fake who you are. So they verify that that person tweeting is in fact you. But that's going on pause, right?
Yeah, the Nazis have ruined it.
They ruin everything.
The Nazis ruin everything.
How did they ruin it this time?
So Twitter announced via the @Twitter support handle that it's putting a pause on verifying any and all accounts until it can rework the verification process after they verified white nationalist Jason Kessler, who started the Unite the Right movement, was pretty involved with the Charlottesville incidents. Understandably, they got a lot of flack from Twitter users, and Twitter had to kind of back up and say, hey, this isn't, you know, we're not validating them, we're not endorsing them, this is just to say this is who this person
is. Is, yeah.
But it wasn't really received that way, and so Twitter at least kind of took that feedback and said, all right, well, no blue check marks for anyone now.
Yeah, see, I see both sides of this argument. I understand that
right. It
might seem like a validation, but if the mission is just to verify who people are, and Twitter, I mean, people come put Twitter under fire for a lot of things, trying to say that people have hate speech on Twitter, that these things, and they've often said, look, this is a marketplace of ideas. You may not agree with all these ideas. In fact, you might agree with or really strongly disagree, but that's what Twitter is, and that's
right.
It's supposed to be this open source for whatever our thoughts are.
Exactly, but it's not. It's kind of become a cesspool of trolls and Russian bots lately, so hopefully they can fix this.
So do you have a blue check, by the way, I wanted to ask?
I do, yes.
I do. So we're safe?
Yes, we're safe.
Okay.
Ours aren't getting taken away, but tough luck for anyone that's been applying.
So I'm on Instagram, and I love searching what my friends do, and I'm not great at using hashtags, and I never really quite see the point, but hashtag may be rising to a new prominence in Instagram.
Yes, so Instagram is testing out a new feature. Only a few users have kind of been able to look at this, Mashable says, that will let you so you can follow your friends, you can follow brands, celebrities, and now you can follow hashtags.
Okay.
So while it might not be great for following like hashtag Monday, because you're going to get a lot of junk in your feed.
Right.
It might be pretty cool for following, you know, like if you're a vegan, like hashtag what vegans eat to kind of get some meal inspiration. Or like if you're really into fitness, I know there's a lot of niche hashtags for that. So this could actually be kind of cool for a lot of Instagram users.
So just backing up for people that maybe not be the most familiar with hashtag, obviously that's to identify a certain topic that the Instagram post is covering. Sometimes they're sarcastic, but sometimes they're really point on and very specific. So when you say you follow a hashtag, does that mean that anyone that uses that particular hashtag in their own individual posts, whether they're your friends or your strangers, that will then appear in your feed as you search through Instagram?
You know, I don't have the testing feature yet, so I can't say for sure, but that's kind of what it looks like to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that'll be interesting. I think that that will really drive people to discover new people and new posts on there, and that's really what the hashtags often are all about.
Yeah, I think that'll be a good tool for Instagram to use.
I still need it. Do you have a blue check mark on your Instagram account?
I do, yes.
Oh, I don't. I don't know how to get
one
of those.
Well, that one hasn't been eliminated yet.
Yes.
So
I still have to keep trying.
Still have a chance.
Okay, so we've been teasing this one all day. Sending your nudes to Facebook in an effort to hopefully never have your nudes on Facebook, right? This is happening in Australia.
It sounds kind of like an oxymoron, yeah.
Okay.
But this is being tested. Forbes reports that this is being tested in Australia, where Facebook is asking users to send in their nudes, saying, hey, if you send us your nudes, we can run them through our algorithm and prevent them from appearing on our site ever. And so this is actually the funniest thing was that if you send your nudes in, they will be looked at by a certain group of people to verify that they are nudes.
Oh my gosh.
So I want to know like what that job posting was like and who applied for it.
Right. That sounds like something that you might want to apply for. And then when you start seeing the nudes, go, what have I gotten myself into?
You know, I think you have a different mentality than me because I never once thought about applying for that job.
way to throw me under the bus, Randy. I appreciate that. What I want to ask about that is so it actually will kind of look almost like how they have facial recognition. So like when I post a photo on Facebook,
right,
it often knows who I'm with in my photos.
Right. So this is kind of an extension of that where Facebook can already identify your face and now it's hoping to identify everything that is not your face.
That sounds like a Google. Terribly wrong.
It sounds like it could go horribly wrong. I don't think I'll participate.
I'll send a few and see what I get back. All right, social media college degree. This is also out of Australia, right?
Yeah, this is. So this is really interesting. These two individuals, a married couple, are starting called Social Media College. And it's a business that offers a 12-month diploma in social media.
Interesting. I think, I mean, it makes sense. We have, I mean, marketing was probably a new concept when it came out as a degree, and social media is such an important role in our society, and now that makes
sense.
Right,
right. And so it kind of makes sense. It doesn't make sense to me because I grew up with it, and same with you, where, you know, you're so accustomed to it. But for a lot of older individuals or, you know, those that have worked in marketing for 30 plus years, it's kind of a new concept. So I can see how it would be beneficial.
That's really nice that you said I grew up on social media. That's kind of you to give me that.
I'm just trying to be nice.
Randy, where can people find out more about your stories and what the great stuff that happens upstairs?
ChicagoTribune.com or follow me on Twitter with my verified blue check mark at Randy M. Schaefer.
Randy, have a great Monday. Okay.